one and all, once again to Nerds on the Rocks, episode 184. We are coming from you on this lovely and hot summer night, from lovely all over the United States. I'm joined this week by Justin.
Hey, hey.
And James.
Good morning, Vietnam.
Good morning, Vietnam, indeed. This week, we are going to abuse the calendar like everybody else does and talk about summer movies, now that the summer movie season's over, even though summer still has a month to go.
Summer has a month to go, but when has man obeyed the laws of nature? Even though we were the ones who defined when the season started and ended, so technically we're defying our own laws.
Yeah, it's really weird, because, I mean, I don't know anything that actually follows, like, summer being from June to September. Summer's pretty much May to August, fall, September to November. I mean, winter's pretty much December for most people, but, yeah.
I think part of it probably has to do with the school schedules just made that the break period, so that just sort of became to be defined as the summer season.
Yeah. It tends to be warmer, so people tend to go on vacations, and people are out of school and stuff like that. So yeah, it makes sense, and that's kind of what the summer movie season is centered around. I mean, it's moved up further now, where we start off with not Memorial Day. We start off with May, like the May 3rd weekend, or the first weekend of May is the start of the summer movie season.
Yeah, like, it used to be Memorial Day, but I think Spider-Man 3 was the first really big one that kicked off the beginning of May back in 2007, and that sort of set, like, that was basically Marvel, like some Marvel movie or another would open up that very first weekend of May consistently for, I think, every year since then. Let's see, 7?
No.
8 had Iron Man, 09 had Wolverine.
Was there a May movie in 2011?
Thor. Yeah, then 2010 had Iron Man 2, 2011 had Thor, 2012 had Avengers, and then last year had Iron Man 3.
We can forgive you for forgetting about Thor.
I just thought that, like, Thor was April.
No, and now, well, probably in Europe, and now we're moving up further again because Captain America came out in April, but...
Well, even then, I mean, you could sort of say, like, Fast Five in 2011 was an April release date. This one article that David Ehrlich wrote for The Dissolve basically said, it's more that the summer movie season doesn't really exist because we've basically created a film climate where a blockbuster can be just as successful in any season of the year.
Yeah, and that's actually a good thing, and I mean, we've had this discussion, I don't know if we've had it here, but I really hope that that's something that the video game industry picks up on at some point, because it went from, like, you had your blockbusters in the summer to, like, it was Hunger Games and Frozen were two of the biggest movies of last year, if not the two biggest of last year.
Yeah, I know Catching Fire was the biggest domestically, Frozen was the biggest worldwide.
Yeah, and those are both November releases. Captain America is one of the highest grossing worldwide, and that came out in April.
Mm-hmm. I think that and the Lego movie, the highest grossing domestically.
And, I think Guardians of the Galaxy actually passed them for this year.
I think it's close. I can look it up.
It's only like $250 billion at this point. If
a movie made $250 billion, I think we'd all retire.
I'm pretty sure that would be Guardians of the Galaxy is still $3 million behind Captain America and the Lego Movie.
At the same point, or in total?
The current state domestic box office: Guardians is at number 3 at $256 million. The Lego Movie is number 2 at $257 million. And Captain America is number 1 at $259 million. But that's basically, they get another weekend, it will be the highest grossing domestic of the year. But again, that's pre-Mockingjay, pre-Hobbit, which I suppose would be the two possible big players in the fall box office-wise.
And kind of getting back to our point, that's also fucking conventional wisdom, because August used to be kind of the runoff where you just kind of released movies that were blockbusters but didn't have any steam behind them. And Guardians of the Galaxy coming out to be the highest grossing film of the year domestically right now, or he's getting up there, kind of bucked that. And so did, to a lesser degree, Ninja Turtles as well. They both had stellar openings in August, which kind of went against traditional trends. So it's going to be curious, and we kind of we kind of see that going. Just to kind of touch on this briefly, with the I don't want to say the cinematic schedules, because mostly right now it's Marvel and DC, but we've seen them carve up the year now. We have, you know, like, it's not just May, June, July. We have releases in March. We have releases in August. We have releases in November. So they're all over the place with their schedule now, and that's good.
I think I guess one of the other positive effects of that is that like distributors of smaller, not non-blockbusters, but not like Oscar contender award movies are able to more spread out through the year. So spring has still basically become like the go-to auteur release date for stuff like Nymphomaniac, Under the Skin, Grand Budapest Hotel, stuff like that. But then you can have IFC go, nah, we're just going to drop Boyhood in the middle of July. Or, you know, something like Snowpiercer can drop around that same place. So it's basically by spreading the blockbuster across everywhere, all the smaller guys can fill in the gaps wherever they want.
Yeah. And it's going to be interesting. I think the other thing is it does actually give more room to blockbusters, because you don't, like, we kind of saw it this year, not as bad. I think this year, what was this year? This year was that there were no major records set. Nobody had broke. I don't think anybody's broke a billion worldwide. Oh, Transformers did.
Yeah. To the utter surprise of literally everybody.
I don't think anybody was surprised by that. Because the last one broke a billion.
Yeah, there's one interesting thing I'd like to talk about with Transformers box office, and that I think the largest chunk of it came from China. Like, the China gross of Transformers was like a good deal higher than what it took in through the U.S. alone, which is sort of 40. Yeah,
is that part really surprising though? Because I mean, the movie was filmed in China.
Well, like the last 20 minutes where they literally just fly to China, basically because the money follows it.
Yeah, that's pretty much because
it's less surprising and more like indicative of a changing blockbuster landscape that is focusing becoming more global as a global focus as opposed to specifically U.S. centric.
Isn't that part of why they made Transformers 4 too, actually? Because the Chinese market wanted it, or they wanted more of it.
I think there's either that or Paramount saw the Chinese dollars from Dark of the Moon, and they went for it. Because I'm pretty sure, at least from 2 onward, they made progressively less domestically. Like, if you just look at the U.S. box office, what was the new one called? Age of Dinosaurs, I guess. I think it made less than all three of the original just in the U.S.
Yeah, domestically.
So it's like they're still having their crazy big opening weekends, but they're dropping a lot more than they did before.
I was also going to say, I think that's the other thing, is I don't believe any film this year, or at least this summer, has opened over 100 million yet.
I think Transformers was the one, but there were rumors that Paramount was like edging it a little bit up in order to...
Yeah, because it was like exactly 100 million.
So yeah. I know the other, like, really close high ones were, like, Captain America. I know Captain America, Godzilla, and X-Men were all in, like, the 90-plus million range.
Guardians was as well. Like, just at the edge of it. But, yeah. I mean, I think part of it is also because... And another trend we've seen... I mean, I guess we're talking generally about the movies this year, but I think the other trend we've seen is, like, now that we've gone beyond the midnight showings... We've gone beyond the 10 p.m. showings where now films are opening up at 7 or 8 to 9 or 4, which I honestly have to say is a trend I completely support, because I have seen...
Like, as someone who will be, like, seeing stuff like Mockingjay and Age of Ultron opening, like, the first showing possible, it is nice that I won't have to stay up the whole night in order to do it.
This is very beneficial for college students.
Absolutely, because I actually went to a midnight showing Avengers the day before an exam. I still got an A in that course, but it was totally worth it.
I was gonna say it's convenient for everybody, because you get to see the movie, and you can be home in bed by like 11 o'clock if you work the next day or something like that. It's better than staying up until 2 or 3 in the morning to watch your movie.
Yeah. The only person who's really inconvenienced by it are people who can't see it the Thursday night and follow people who are, like, careless on Twitter with spoilers or things they don't think of as spoilers.
Yes, that's the problem that I had with Guardians, because I swear to God, it was only like 8 p.m. and people already had gifs of it on Tumblr.
Of the post-credit scene?
Just like everything.
Yeah, like,
they gave,
I remember.
They gave no amounts of fucks.
I don't know if that's possible.
I wasn't paying as much attention, or it's like changed in the past year. Because I remember when Avengers came out, and it came out a week early in Europe. They actually did like the good job of not spoiling all the big things. I did not know Thanos was going to happen until it happened in front of me.
I think Thanos was also because I know that they keep certain things out of up.
I take that back. You're just another average group of people like us.
Which really sucks though, because they got. Like, I mean, it wasn't a huge thing, but it does, because it was the same thing that they did with Guardians of the Galaxy, where like if you saw another fan screening of it, they didn't have the post credit sequence.
I know some of that has to do with a lot of those are filmed like at the very last minute. Like I'm pretty sure they filmed the Shawarma bit in Avengers after the initial world premiere.
They did.
But it kind of backfired on them. I mean, it's kind of novel if you're a fan of the character or whatever, but it was like they made a big deal about it. Oh, we're not going to show it to anybody because we want them to keep it a secret. And then you kind of saw it's like, oh, this is what you were hiding?
Yeah, I suppose not to keep on this divergent track too long, but I do sort of prefer those kind of scenes, like less the ones that are just commercials for things to come and more the ones that are all like, hey, thanks for staying for the credits. Here's a little funny thing.
Speaking of commercials for things to come, the first major movie of the summer was The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yes. I guess some of us talked about it on the Amazing Spider-Man cast. I sadly wasn't able to make it, so I guess if you guys give your quick thoughts, then I'll give mine, and then we can move forward to anything else.
Well, I think when I used the segue to talk about it being a commercial for something else, I was actually talking about the X-Men teaser. That's pretty much what
I didn't even say to see that, but okay.
I was going to say, that does define The Amazing Spider-Man 2. The Amazing Spider-Man 2 is pretty much like, hey, we promise we're going to get to an interesting movie at some point.
Yeah, eventually we will. We just need to sell you on it right now. And, since we'll start off with that, I suppose this isn't a secret to anyone who follows me on Twitter. I did not like anything about this movie beyond that one action scene with a rhino at the beginning and like a couple technical factors. Like, I think it's gorgeous. Like, I was so happy to see a big blockbuster actually shooting on film and getting all the great quality lighting and color that comes out of using that. But, oh my god, every plot point, every character decision, all of it is, it's just the most wrong-headed kind of blockbuster filmmaking, where they're either A, only interested in moving the plot into a specific place for sequels, and at the same time also indulging in the worst kind of fate destiny bullcrap. Like, the moment when they reveal that the part when they reveal that the, like, only Peter could have been Spider-Man because he was genetically destined to be Spider-Man, I practically walked out of the theater. it was infuriatingly indulgent. I was like, really, guys? I thought you were we were grown-up enough adults that we don't indulge in Calvinist bullshit. Like, I thought we just started centuries ago.
I get why that annoys people, but I don't mind it so much. I guess there's a lot in the movie to dislike. Again, part of it just does seem like it's busy doing anything but actually trying to be an enjoyable movie with a decent plot. Part of it is also just the fact that like the main characters disappear for most of the film.
Yeah, I mean, you could take out Electro, like not even changing the current state of the movie. You could just remove every scene with Electro, and you would pretty much not lose anything. Like, there's only one or two scenes where Norman Osborn's kid.
Harry.
Yeah, Harry. Dane DeHaan interacts with him. That you could have just said, okay, and then he breaks into Oscorp on his own. Like, other than that, you could have taken him out completely and lost nothing.
Yeah, it's a...
Yeah, a little bit.
It's a weird movie in that regard.
I need to see the film again to see, like, how my opinion of it then stacks up with as it is now.
Well, and if you get the DVD Blu-ray special, you get to meet Peter's dad.
Yeah.
So can we talk about that real quick?
Where he explains that he made super science to make his dad the sun, and that with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah. So can we talk about how, like, really weird it is that they're focusing on that as, like, part of their marketing?
I said that when I saw a commercial from I think we said this with the James was on the Amazing Spider-Cast. I said this is that I feel like they are the only ones who are interested at all in that storyline.
Exactly,
but they really think it's something deep and important.
I don't care about Peter's parents. I care about Peter.
Like I think it's sort of best described in the scene where he's talking with Aunt May, demanding to know the answers of what happened to his parents. Where Aunt May's all like, Peter, your dad was a deadbeat loser who left you, and I raised you. Get over him. And I'm like, yes, listen to Aunt May. But then, because he's the indulgent teenager who has to be right, she gives him the box of answers anyway.
Yeah. I don't want to harp on this too long.
Real quick. So you talked about, you know, how, like, this is basically just, like, advertising for another movie. Did you guys hear a couple... I think it was, like, last week or something, where they revealed, like, two of the people in the Sinister Six movie. It's supposed to be Kraven and Mysterio.
God damn it. Like, of all the Spider-Man villains, those are the two I've always wanted to be in a movie, but, man, do I have no interest in them being in this, like, first series of movies. Like,
I'm just wondering, though, it's, like, I'm still trying to figure out, like, who the Sinister Six movie is for. Like, who specifically...
Well, Sony executives.
Well, here's the other thing, and I think... I feel like maybe we can have a new show with all this comic book news we haven't talked about recently. But the other thing is that after this movie came out, they decided to move Amazing Spider-Man 3 into 2018.
Somewhere.
They're doing a Venom and a Sinister Six movie beforehand, and it's like... None of that makes sense with the setup you've given us over these two movies. And it really did feel like they needed a...
But don't you care about watching a movie called Venom : Carnage? Don't you want to see Carnage?
I wouldn't mind seeing Venom.
I wouldn't mind a Venom Carnage movie if they had set it up. Like, it's... Again, it's... Like, I mean, again, you know, you can change stuff. It doesn't need to be a purist, but... Like, Venom is such a core part of Spider-Man and his journey. It's going to be weird because, like, unless they have Andrew Garfield come in, get the symbiote, disappear, introduce Venom, introduce Carnage. I mean, granted, we've seen Amazing Spider-Man 2, so they probably will do all of that in the first 15 minutes.
And there will probably be magic blood.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Okay, for real though, what is up with Spider-Man villains and burning his blood?
What is up with magic blood in general? Like, it showed up in Star Trek, Into Darkness, and then it shows up in another movie on this list, and I'm still trying to figure out why it comes up and why it annoys me so much.
I think it's annoying because, like, it's basically a MacGuffin, and it's one of those stupid ways to, like, put the hero in danger without, like, any real effort.
I don't know if it's a MacGuffin, but...
It's kind of a MacGuffin. In Star Trek and in Spider-Man, it basically is a MacGuffin.
Well, in Spider-Man, it makes sense. They do take extraneous amount of time to explain why his threat is important.
Because he can do anything a spider can, including Seth Heal.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, I think the big problem with it, though, is, as we saw at the climax of this film, it's like everybody wants his blood, but the experiment didn't work beforehand. And it apparently doesn't work afterhand, so it's like everybody wants this, but nobody really knows if it's good or not. But we spent enough time beating up on Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, let's...
If you want to hear us beat up on Spider-Man 2 some more, listen to the Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, I feel like this should be like one of those comic editor's notes, like, to learn more the full backstory of this event, go to Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 27.
Basically.
Okay,
Next movie up would be Neighbors?
Yeah.
I saw
which it. Which I was surprised wasn't as funny as I thought it would be.
It's weird, like, I think it's decently funny, it's actually what it, like, the thing that interested me more was that it was super functional story-wise. Like, I mean, most of the jokes didn't hit for it, but it actually felt like they constructed a working story. I was like...
Yeah, it was weird, though, because the main story, the one that I was really interested in, was not the feud or anything. It was the one between Efron and... Franco, and they just kind of, it doesn't come up until like near the end of the film, and then they just kind of drop it.
I still like their little like dialogue between each other, like bros before hoes, masculine before Jasmine from Aladdin.
Yeah,
a lot of funny parts, but I do think after a while it kind of fades. It's one of the more consistently funny movies this year.
Which isn't saying a ton.
Well, I mean, of the summers, it says much.
Okay. It is my second favorite, only definitive comedy movie of the summer. Like I think Guardians is a funny movie, but of movies that are unquestionably and only counted genre-wise can count as comedies, it is my second favorite. Beyond one we'll get to later, which is...
22 Jump Street.
We'll get there. Anyway,
but I was actually gonna be—I was gonna ask what are the other ones.
Actually, I think those are the only ones I know of. Like most of the other stuff was just big blockbusters or like smaller indie level stuff.
But there was other ones like the Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah, there was
one,
a million ways to die in the West.
Nothing died quickly.
What
heard.
Was that Adam Sandler one? Blended.
Oh, Blended.
Yeah, there was Tammy.
Wait, hold up. What was the Adam Sandler one?
Blended. That was the one where they went to Africa, I think, because Adam Sandler wanted to go on vacation to Africa.
Dude, I heard that was awful. I mean, the premise itself already sounds like pretty awful.
Well, here's what I heard. Nothing. And that issue tells me more than enough. It's like, it's not good or bad. It's, if you don't hear people talking about it, it means it wasn't worth anything. These bad movies people, you know, rip on. This was just like it came and went like a fart in the wind.
Wow, that's so poetic.
So I guess I personally speaking, I think the most divisive film of the summer, Godzilla.
Yes, which I'm just gonna pull out. I am very much in favor of this movie, but I also totally understand why people don't like it.
I'm gonna pull out. It's us.
I forgive you.
Yeah, like I said, one of the. I'm a huge fan.
Awesome.
It was one of my favorites. This summer. I think a lot of people just kind of expected a different type of movie, and I understand that. I completely understand that, but I wasn't expecting Godzilla to be here for like an hour. And yes, it gave you monster blue balls, but it made the final fight all the more.
Yeah,
epic.
Like as one friend described it, it felt like a very long and tantalizing hand job with an amazing climax. I think it's one of the movies of the summer that gets consistently better as it goes along. Like, I think it struggles early on, since the Bryan Cranston stuff
actually
doesn't really pay off.
Hold on.
It gets consistently better as it goes along the way. Yeah?
Okay, back that up. First off, that's wrong. Second of all, let's go back to that analogy. It's like a drawn-out hand job where you get a great climax.
Yes. Like, the ending is amazing.
But you were going
to wait a while for it. Hey, it's not my analogy.
Did you get this analogy from like another version of me?
Maybe.
What the hell, dude?
Did you give him a hand job?
I don't know
what's going
on. Not yet.
We are not at liberty to disclose that.
Well, too bad.
I think the biggest fear to me is that I found Bryan Cranston to be a much more interesting lead than
Aaron Taylor
Andrew
Johnson.
Taylor.
Who I don't think is a bad actor, because I think he was really good in Kick-Ass, but he is definitely very much meant to just be a person that we follow around on a walking tour of the rest of the story.
Yeah, which kind of sucks, because he survives the most insane stuff. Like, honestly speaking, if I wasn't watching this movie, I would have thought he was in on it. Because every time he shows up, everybody else dies around him, and he survives.
Yeah, but as far as,
totally
like, consistent
off
quality set pieces, I think there are a few summaries that are better. Because, I mean, you have the whole bit in Hawaii, like, with both the fight between the Godzilla and the Buddha, which is mostly not shown.
God,
like specifically the bit on the train I really liked.
And then
when they're on the train tracks at night and there's the train coming at them and then the Mudo passes underneath, I think is a really great bit.
And I liked Ken Watanabe.
He's a nice supporting. I think a couple of his lines explain basically the central theme of the movie best, is that this is a movie that demonstrates how nature, it's not that we are destroying nature, it's that nature does not give a flying fuck about us. They are going to do their thing. They are not going to notice us. It is a movie about the insignificance of humanity set alongside a giant monster who shoots out atomic breath.
which is awesome when that came
up. Oh, awesome. I know one of my friends was like, oh, come on, please don't tell me they're going to be, like, above doing that. And then it happened. I was like, oh, thank God. Like, I could hear a little, like, an 8-year-old boy behind me just screaming his head off. He was like, yes, thank you.
Okay.
Was that Justin?
It was not Justin.
Okay. So, Justin, what is your, really quickie, what is your anti-camp?
Sorry, what?
Okay, no anti-camp. Never mind. Moving on.
I was busy with something. What happened?
We were asking your general thoughts.
Oh, yeah. No, it's just really boring, and it went on way too long. But that, the Firebird thing.
Was it under 2 hours?
Yeah, I think it was, like, exactly 2 hours.
Yeah, but it felt like not much was happening in those 2 hours.
That's true. Like Spider-Man was technically only a little over 2 hours, but it felt like it went on far longer.
And also, that Firebird thing actually was pretty cool. I'll give the movie that.
Okay.
But otherwise,
yeah, those are all reasonable points.
But otherwise, it wasn't good. And whenever Aaron Johnson and What's Her Nuts started kissing, I kept on thinking of that, the Ultimates. Because they're related in the Avengers.
Well, don't think of the Ultimates, because
yeah,
we don't speak of Mark Miller here.
I was going to say, technically speaking, you should think about... it should be the other way around, because this comes out first, so you shouldn't be thinking of the Avengers, but whatever. Okay, anybody saw Million Dollar
Nope.
Arm?
Nope.
Okay, then I guess the next stage to test.
Did anyone see? Oh, yeah.
It's pretty good.
Which
it is.
I think was my favorite comic book movie of this summer.
I would not agree with that.
Yeah, I'm sure most people will go with Guardians. I actually kind of prefer
okay,
this.
Okay, well, my favorite is a different one that's not a blockbuster, so I'll just sort of mention it at the end.
Hold on.
Wait, which one is it? Which one is no, that?
Oh, yeah.
I forgot that's based off of a Japanese comic.
Yeah, French comic.
Whatever.
Yeah, and I think it only tangentially used it, but yeah, X-Men was pretty damn good.
Yeah, I love the fact that they just kind of went nuclear with it and decided, okay, we're just going to reset this whole shebang, but when we do that, we're just going to bring back everything and go batshit insane with it, because honestly, at the end of the day, that's what comic books are. Comic books are like painting ourselves into a corner. Let's just do something stupid. What does it make sense to you?
Like, I don't get how, you know, they're like, oh, we need Eric and Charles to convince to, like, stop Mystique. But then it's like, yeah, no, Charles just totally does everything, and Eric's just a dick. They're like, why they're just like, okay, yeah, we do have to stop. Or Eric's just like, yeah, okay, we do have to stop.
Like,
he decides to pull a gun on her. Instead of
I think part of that was them... I guess this is partially just me projecting my own ideas onto the movie, but it seems like maybe it was them trying to create a future where the two of them were reconciled in some way. Like, because, I mean, they're meeting, like, with Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart towards the end, where they're like, man, how many years we wasted fighting. It sort of seemed like they were trying to sort of take care of that problem, like, as well.
I think they just kind of realize, like, I assume that was the starting point that led to everything, and, you know, it's probably one of those, the butterfly effect, where they probably didn't realize it until they had distance and clarity to say this is the event that that's all it is.
And I guess also they were thinking, like, I mean, you consider the status quo at the end of First Class, like, Magneto and Mystique are on the same, are definitively on the same team at that point, so perhaps they had, in their old age, forgotten where they were at that point.
Okay, never mind.
I think it's pretty good. I do love that the basic plot is them trying to stop the kind of dark and gritty future that defines some blockbusters. Like, I really did like that was the basic central thrust.
Yeah, I also like that it kind of pared it down to just like a handful of X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
It was only basically like 5 of them.
Yeah,
And Wolverine was pretty much window dressing.
He was just there to carry the camera around.
Yeah.
And I guess the pleasant surprise for most people of that movie was that Quicksilver was pretty damn cool.
Yeah, yeah. Now it's up to the age of
It's sort of, okay, this is why you don't have to worry. It's sort of a reminder for me to not judge the movie too much on the marketing, because, yeah, I expected him to be obnoxious and insufferable. He turned out to be pretty damn fun. It made me kind of bug when they sort of left him behind after that.
Well, hopefully that's the lesson people take with the new Doctor Doom stuff they show for Fantastic Four. So I doubt anybody's going to to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Okay, wait,
well, it depends on how much Phil and Chronicle will see their benefit of the doubt.
Can we also agree that his costume is pretty terrible?
Well, Dr. Doom's costume in general
is
terrible.
No, I mean
terrible.
Quicksilver.
Yeah, his design's kind of lame. But then again, it's also not that much better in Avengers, so, oh well.
I mean,
yeah,
at least the person inside it is
that
cool.
That makes sense.
I mean, to be fair, Quicksilver has a really gaudy costume in general. Well, I guess not gaudy. I guess I was thinking of the green one. I guess he's converted to blue now. Looks better. But, yeah, I mean, for a kid, I thought it worked well, especially for his era. I think they did a great job of knowing the type of personality quirks and stuff like that with that character. We've already kind of insulted Blended real quick.
I think I'm the only one who saw Maleficent, correct?
Yeah, I still want to see. I've heard decent
it,
stuff
it
about
is
it.
It is a deeply, deeply flawed movie that I kind of love anyway, because it basically is like a feminist retake on the Sleeping Beauty story. It's not one of those ones where it's just telling the original story slightly differently from the villain's perspective. It's saying, no, that entire Sleeping Beauty movie that Disney released 50 years ago, total bullshit. Like, Maleficent is this basically Miyazaki-like fairy girl who lives in this magical world, which then the king basically says, hey, kill her and hand me over this world and I will make you my heir. So then Sharlto Copley, who was like childhood friends with her, basically drugs and rapes her. And the reason I think something like that is like it's basically a rape revenge movie.
You should probably clarify that part about her being
okay.
Raped.
I'm supposed to clarify he drugs her and then
cuts off her wings.
Yeah, in like a super grisly like not very frilled up, just very blatant and to the point sequence. And then with her sort of stumbling around afterwards, sort of cements that as, okay, yes, this is the imagery we're going for. And the reason I think it avoided being exploitative is partially because there wasn't any sexualization going on, and partially because they didn't make, like, her... They basically didn't make her revenge to then fall out of the rest of the movie. It was basically about her trying to find redemption and sort of move on. Like, I'm not entirely sure if becoming, like, best mother-daughter buddies as an adoptive mom figure with her rapist daughter is the best plot point, but it feels like it worked for enough people that I do think it is, if not a good movie, certainly a worthwhile one.
I'm still wondering how the hell that movie got made. Or
I know.
How they let
it has to
movie.
Be like the executives just approved the movie as, okay, sure, make a Maleficent movie. That'll make us money. And weren't
and
really
no
paying
one...
attention until the filming
God,
was done. And
God,
they're like, oh my God.
God,
and
I,
it made them
yeah,
money.
It made so much money. I think it's like I think it's the second highest grossing movie of the year worldwide.
I really hope that's how it went, because, man, I just cannot believe that Disney, of all people, even with Pirates of the Caribbean, managed to let a freaking rape analogy into their one of their big movies for the year.
Yeah, Maleficent, weird, bizarre, half-broken, but fucking unforgettable. Did anyone see A Million Ways to Die in the West?
No.
That's not even us. I think that's everyone.
I was going to, but then I got distracted by something not that.
Yeah, I've never been a fan of Seth MacFarlane's comic sort of style of comedy,
I wasn't really interested.
I like Ted, so I figured this might be good too. But then I think word of mouth just got around, and I ended up turning me away from it.
Yeah, I think I had a free screening to it, and then word of mouth on it was just
and
so
you're like
negative.
I don't feel like driving out there.
Well, it's not even, it was just like, I'd rather not waste my time. And it does, again, a lot of people people who had seen it didn't care for it, and nobody's really talking it up, like it's underrated.
Is it on DVD yet?
I don't think so. Spider-Man has already hit, Spider-Man Neighbors, I think, have already both hit VOD, as like digital rentals, but I don't think Die in the West has.
No, they're both out. Well, I know Spider-Man's
okay.
out.
Spider-Man's definitely out.
And Godzilla's out yesterday.
Captain America is out in about 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, Captain. The Fault in Our Stars.
I saw that because I have a teenage girl sister who's all like, hey, James, if you bring me to see this, that's my birthday present. And I was like, okay.
I just, I thought you were going to say you have a teenage girl inside of you.
Well, that is also unquestionable. I have the soul of a teenage girl. I mean, I saw Frozen 5 times, so that much is obvious.
James, Jesus Christ.
What?
You saw it 5 times?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I did not know you saw it 5 times.
Oh, come on. How many times did Earl see Avengers in theaters?
I don't know.
Once.
Oh. Well, most of those times was basically another person who hadn't seen it who I had to bring
uh-huh.
to see it, so...
Uh-huh, okay.
Who you had to bring.
Were they your hand puppet friends?
No.
Were you the one who recommended they check it
yes.
out? Okay. I'll go with you again.
Look, it was a movie that had bad marketing and nobody believed it was good until you actually said, no, really, sit down, it really is that good.
I thought people expected it to be good. I mean, maybe because I saw it through Tumblr, and I know that Arthur is a big Tumblr celebrity. People love him.
People love who?
The author of the book.
Oh, Fault yeah, with Our Stars. Go. Oh, okay, we're back on that. Yes.
Yeah.
What were you talking about?
Anyway, I've only seen Fault with Our Stars once.
Okay.
No, Fault with Our Stars is possibly overly... Like it is a super, it is a fairly sappy movie, but like there's really only one scene that's overly manipulative, and it basically is just it's just sort of a totally competent a teen romance movie that, like, I think as someone pointed out in terms of its handling of cancer stuff, it doesn't feel, unlike a lot of other ones, it's definitely made for people who are actually, you know, suffering from cancer to sort of give them some kind of catharsis, as opposed to just being a don't worry, things are going to turn out all right for the people who then. So it's the people who live on after they pass away.
Perhaps that was the fault all up, and I forget it.
No.
Anyway, you know, one of them was fucking awesome. Edge of Tomorrow.
My plan for Fault in Our Stars was me and Jess were going to go see it and just laugh at everybody. But we couldn't do that.
That would be mean.
Oh, that would be awesome. Go laugh at people who went to see a cancer movie.
What? Okay, can you guys, like, go one at a time?
No, we're moving
on. Talking about
rude.
Earl, you saw this one.
We're talking about Live, Die, Repeat.
Yeah, I thought it was called Live, Die, Repeat, Cruise, Blunt Edge of Tomorrow.
I think Live, Die, Repeat has become like the pre-title for like the home video version. So like on iTunes and the Blu-ray, that's more prominently displayed on the cover. I don't know if it's a better title, but it definitely fits the movie better.
This movie has, like, 18 different titles, I swear.
But anyway, whatever you want to call it, Earl, I think we could agree it's pretty fucking good.
I have not seen it.
Oh, you have?
I saw it.
This
is one movie I was disappointed I didn't get a chance to see.
Yeah,
I wanted to see it, and what happened? My screening was on a time I was out, and then, like, my friend... that I go to the movies. I was going to go see it with 22 Jump Street.
What?
That would have been an amazing double feature.
But it was, I forgot, something came up. I saw 22 Jump Street and then I had to leave the movie theater.
But no, so I'm the only one who got around to Edge of Tomorrow?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really do want to see it. I'm so disappointed
it
I haven't got a chance.
It is great. It is so good. And it's one where, I think it was a victim of sort of bland marketing, because it didn't really convey that it was a frequently funny movie. Because, Tom Cruise is very much playing against type. Like, he is playing a super cowardly deserter type guy who then gets drafted into the military and forced to be fighting on the front lines in their big invasion, and then he dies, but...
Please, James, tell me the entire movie.
Okay, yes, he gets stuck with the goo that makes him constantly be respawning and reliving the same day over and over again. The basic thematic thing
is,
yeah, I wonder, do you think this movie would have worked if there was, like, some kind of weird sci-fi Dark Souls marketing behind it?
Maybe?
What does Dark Souls marketing mean?
Just, like if Dark Souls had, like, some sort of tie-in or something, be like, oh, experience the harsh, brutal world sometime in the future.
See, I think that would have fit, because that does run counter to the tone. Like, it is a very funny movie, and I think if they played that up a lot more, a lot more people would have went and saw it.
Yeah, I also think that Dark Souls is such a, I guess the best way to say it is the mainstream niche, because the people love Dark Souls stuff, but it's not a huge brand.
Yeah, like it's definitely picked up a lot, but it is unquestionably a game that you will not understand why it is good for quite a while into playing it. But anyway, Edge of Tomorrow, yeah. So yeah, basically, like, a lot of people have made the Groundhog Day comparisons, which are right both in terms of the mechanics of repeating a thing over and over, and also in the basic theme, where it is very much, okay, yes, you have to learn, you are constantly learning from these mistakes until you get everything exactly right. And yeah, it's really funny. Emily Blunt is like an immediate burst out of the door, okay, this woman is an action star, get her in all the action movies right the hell now. I mean, Bill Paxton is a really great supporting character. Like, the whole thing is just an utter delight. It is the best kind of summer blockbuster.
But it is weird that it's one of the, I don't like to use the term, but it is one of the few underperforming films that is
yeah.
summer.
Yeah, I think it was a victim of sort of bland marketing, which is a pity, because it's definitely one that I think is going to pick up a following as it goes on, because people are going to check it out on DVD or Netflix. And it's going to slowly build up a fan base as they discover, oh man, this movie is really damn good.
Do you think it could end up being a Pacific Rim thing where they possibly do end up getting a sequel just because of, like,
maybe, but
because of, like, fan reception?
On the one hand, I think the thing is it's very much not built to be a franchise movie. Like the plot wraps up very, very, like, unquestionably, okay, you're not making another one of these at the end.
That's
why I don't mind so much that it's not getting a sequel. So I'm like, okay, it's a one and done. I'm more annoyed by the lack of success, because that means it'll take longer for people to find out it's good.
Yeah, I mean, it did under 100 million domestically on 178 million. I don't really think it's done less worldwide than Pacific Rim did.
Especially since, that budget doesn't even include the 100 million or so every blockbuster gets in marketing. But yeah, Edge of Tomorrow, sadly not many people caught. The moment it gets a chance, yeah, everyone go see it. It's great.
You should go see Edge of Tomorrow.
Is that your favorite movie of the summer?
It is not, actually. I believe the one that comes up next, actually, is 22 Jump Street.
Didn't see it.
It's just, you do the same thing you did last time. Exactly.
I'm your worst nightmare.
22 Jump Street. Absolutely funny from beginning
to end. It is a goddamn delight. Phil Lord and Chris Miller are basically unstoppable at this point. Like, at least in terms of pulling great movies out of what sounds like a bad idea.
I just can't believe that the original was funny. So, by the way that things sound, the second one must be pretty amazing on its own.
It is... pretty much about just as good, and pretty much, yeah, it is just as good, just as funny. It is an absolute, like, I basically laughed. I don't think I had more than a minute gap between laughs the entire runtime.
And I think the best thing about it is it's smart. It really is the trap that a lot of comedy sequels fall into. And instead of running away from it, it really just jumps into
just
it. And we're just going to embrace
it. What's the guy's name? With the mustache, from
Ron Burgundy.
No, Nick Offerman from Park Recreation is basically telling
you.
Okay.
Turns out a lot of people didn't like the new things that you guys were doing, so just do the same stuff.
Yes, the plot is literally, all right, you guys did good the last time, so now do this, do it right the exact same way next time.
I have a question since I haven't seen the movie.
Yes,
is Ice Cube still fantastic?
Yes.
Gosh, he is in the best scene in the movie.
I think that might be my second favorite scene. Like, the scene after that where Channing Tatum then realizes what Ice Cube was reacting over.
That's what I'm talking about. That was my favorite scene.
When they're back in their base and Channing Tatum just all of a sudden realizes this is sort of the problem with talking about comedies, because you can't say, because anything you say about why it's good is a spoiler, because you're spoiling a joke. But no.
But that was absolute. I died.
I lost my mind. Like, the are we gonna make out scene in the climax?
Oh yeah.
Oh my God.
There are a lot of good cameos.
Let's
like my favorite cameo
let's
is one during the amazing end credit sequence.
The end credits were the best part.
Contract dispute.
Let's move on.
Okay, Justin, whatever you do, you have to see 22 Jump Street.
It is the best movie of the summer. Or maybe just my favorite.
Can we talk about
it? It's my favorite movie of the summer. I think it's my second. We'll get to the other one.
I'm going
to
kill both of you.
Has anybody seen How to Train Your Dragon 2? How was it?
Pretty good.
All right, then.
Wait, Justin, have you seen it?
No.
Okay, yeah. I guess summarize it. Yeah, it's one of those sequels that it also is doesn't want to just repeat the first one. It takes the plot in new ways. The characters actually move further along and develop well. Like, one of the secondary characters who people thought was a big spoiler that they revealed in the trailer sadly turns out to be sort of extraneous. Like, they get a really good scene with one of the returning characters, with one of the other characters, but they ultimately end up being sort of inconsequential to the actual plot. But yeah, it is a pretty good, like, totally worth it, fun kids movie. Not as good as the first one, but then again, the first one is pretty much perfect, at least in terms of what kind of movie it's trying to be, so... Yeah, How to Train Your Dragon 2 was good.
I think the first one was also surprisingly good, because this was, like... It was also, like, during that time where people were convinced that, you know, Pixar was the only one who made, like, good animated movies.
Yeah, that was one of the first legitimately great DreamWorks movies. It was the one where they had had good ones before, but that was the one that said, okay, no, these guys... They can do just as good.
Yeah.
Even if no one ever believes them.
Yeah, now I believe them.
Well, I mean, people believe them and they make money, so that's what you need.
Well, yeah, I mean, mostly... But like,
imagine if nothing that exists owe you to make money. Transformers.
Oh, yeah. I was turned away because Jess said it was pretty bad, and a bunch of people I follow on Twitter who I like said it was bad.
They told you correct. It is. To be fair, though, all the Transformers movies are bad.
They're not.
Except the animated one, which is watchable.
No, the animated one. The anime one's kind of meh.
Okay, the animated one at least feels like it's made with effort, which it says a lot when your movie franchise is better when it was like unabashedly a toy commercial.
I kind of take like some things about the Transformers films and how they resonate with people with a grain of salt. Bad.
Like, I think it's a movie that is...
It was my second favorite Transformers
kind
film.
Kind of racist.
Action one.
Very sexist. Unimaginably hateful. But above all else, is mind-numbingly boring.
And we also say it is an extremely creepy.
Oh yeah,
the whole statutory
rape sequence.
Wait, is that where like Mark Wahlberg's daughter's boyfriend is like in his 20s and
he pulls out a thing about the Texas Romeo and Juliet laws that says because they were dating while they were both underage and now he's a legal adult. That it does not count as statutory rape. This is a thing he keeps in his wallet, by the way.
Can we talk about how fucking creepy it is that guys get pulled out, like, out of nowhere?
Like, how did this get into a... Like, is Michael Bay this... Is Paramount this willing to let Bay do whatever he wants that he can get away with this? Like, one commenter on that is, I just said it best, that it feels like he's deliberately trying to give the middle finger to bad taste and, like, all normal standards of decency... Unfortunately, it's because his standards of fuck you have become the mainstream.
I have a serious question here. Well, I have two serious questions. One, do you guys remember, so this isn't the question, but do you guys remember that rumor that, you know, Michael Bay, like, allegedly saw Megan Fox and that, how she's got the role?
I don't know about that. I know she was filmed in a highly sexualized way while underage in Bad Boys 2. I think the scene was deleted, but there was her dancing in, like, an American flying bikini... in Bad Boys 2, while she was underage.
It was something like, you know, Megan Fox, like, had to sleep with Michael Bay, or she did something for him in order to get the part of Transformers 2. But, okay, the two questions. One, how old is the girl in that movie? And two, what is the likelihood that she had to do the same thing?
The actor or the character?
The actress.
She's of age. I will say this much, I don't necessarily know anything about Michael Bay and his history. But, I mean, there is a reason that Hollywood has a term called the casting couch. There's a lot of people who probably do a lot of stuff they don't want to do to get roles. It's a tough industry to get into. And they can just as easily get you out of. So I'm sure there's a lot of people, male and females, who have done stuff they probably wouldn't be proud of.
Yeah, we should move on, because this is...
Yeah, I guess the best way to characterize why Transformers 4 sucks is that there's a scene where Optimus frees Grimlock and the Autobots at the end, and he's all like, I have given you your freedom. Now you will serve me or die. That's the hero, by the way. The hero is saying, hey, I freed you. That means you have to serve me, or I will kill you.
I mean, I saw Man of Steel, so really that doesn't surprise me.
Superman didn't threaten to kill anybody.
He just killed him. Okay, Gretchen Optimus just flat out murders Kelsey Grammer, who is the one good character.
Yeah, that was shocking.
That was fucking, like, really? Like,
that was kind of awesome.
It sucked, because he was the one decent, like, sane talking character in the movie who wasn't, like, a total sociopath. But yeah,
sure,
Transformers 4 is awful. See, pretty much every other movie I've seen this year is more worth it than Transformers, so if you think about seeing it, watch anything else.
You realize that now I'm going to have to see it.
No, it's too boring. Like there are some bad movies that I think are worth checking out just to see what's happening, but this one is...
I'm going to rent it.
Don't. It's as long as Boyhood and 10 times more despicable.
It'll only be like...
I guess that's an understatement, but...
I just want to touch on this real quick, because I kind of agree, and it's the most shocking thing, is that I found it to be tedious and boring, and I think the reason is like, if you just kind of overstimulate people with action,
yeah,
and no real showdown, it goes from exciting to tedious and boring.
Yeah,
and
if you don't bother to make people care about the people involved, then action will, no matter how good the explosions are, how great your effects are, will become boring. And on top of the fact that they're just not very well edited action scenes, like they're more coherent than they were in the first two, where the editing was so insane that I had never had any idea what was happening. But there's still the point where there really isn't any like flow or rhythm to them. It's just a series of every bit of pre-visualization happening after the other, and I could not tell what the tone was, how I was supposed to be feeling in the beat. It's more of effects reels than they are action sequences.
Yeah, I remember coming out and I was like, I found that really boring. I'm like, I did not expect to say that from this movie. Like, there's a lot of things you could accuse Michael Bay of, but I never thought I'd say a boring movie from him. But moving on, James, you can take this one because I know we disagree on
it. Snowpiercer. Wait, you liked it though, correct?
I kind of had the same issue I had with Transformers. Well, no, not the same issue.
Okay.
I did find the action to be the worst part of the film.
That is
though.
Reasonable. I guess full clarification. I adore this movie. I think it is, if not the best movie of the year, very very close. But yeah, I do think it is fair to like the action was stuff I mostly enjoyed for both quality cinematography and just that it had actual stakes invested into it. Like, the fact that it occasionally felt a little over-stylized with slow motion and needless long shots, I didn't mind so much because I'm like, okay, I'm actually invested in the ideas and the characters involved, so I didn't mind that it was sort of so-so in the choreography.
Yeah, sometimes it felt cartoony.
Yeah, I think that, like, I think a lot of Korean filmmakers, Bong Joon-ho especially, are very, they bounce around tones a lot. Like, I think his monster movie, The Host, is another one that has a lot of tone bounces. And you do have to be you do have to be in the right mindset to like be on board with that kind of thing in order for it to work for you.
Yeah, did not work for me. I mean, okay, again, I don't want to because I did enjoy the film overall. I did think that the action was out of place in this film. It felt so like it's a grounded. I hate that term so much, but it's kind of a gritty. Again, I hate that term. Why has Hollywood ruined
because
all these terms?
Because they're used by like masturbatory, crappy blockbusters to try and make juvenile stuff seem self-serious and important. We turn gritty into just this childish thing is dark and serious and therefore important.
Wait, Earl, is it also visceral?
Yes, it is visceral.
No, Snowpiercer is.
Is it Levolution?
It is Levolution, it is Revengeance, actual buzzword to describe it, it is a blisteringly political movie, like it is a super angry class warfare revolution kind of thing. Like, I think a lot of people hate the ending, and I don't want to say they're wrong, but it's one where I don't want to talk about it now because it does require explanation and spoiling it, but it is one where I'm like, okay, the ending is... Nailing down, it is very much them saying unquestionably, this is how we feel about how class warfare revolutions have to go. This is what must happen. So yeah, I loved it. It also helped that it was a really good theater I was in. Like I drove down to Birmingham and they had the speakers cranked up nice and loud, so every bit of thundering train rolling you could unquestionably feel.
It's still on. It's okay. Still on demand, right?
Or yeah, I think it's one that yeah. it's just on iTunes and Amazon, which means it is the summer movie on the most screens theoretically. And like, even though it did get a limited release and then the VOD, it actually did pretty damn well considering it, the release scale it got.
Well, that's part of what turned me away from seeing it, because I wasn't sure if
you could
buy, and I was. So and I was just so irritated by people who were like, mm-hmm. "Oh, you have to see." It's like, "Oh,
yeah."
You have
that,
to
that's
see.
The one. It's like on the one hand, I do want to pressure them to do it, but I also know that it is impossible for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And thankfully, then it became the point where I was like, "Oh, don't worry, you can now."
Yeah, no, that's also part of what's turning me off. Was like people sort of like they consider like if you had to move, you basically just like slap them in the face and ate their dog.
No, don't worry. I do not think that of you, but yeah, now that it is available for everyone, it is beyond worth checking out.
Yes.
I sort of pulled that in with sort of the limited release smaller movie, so I wasn't sure if it was going to come up until like I. But anyway, we'll go on.
Yeah, I was about to say, what is the next movie, folks?
I guess of the wide release.
Dawn of the Rise of the Planet of the Tomb Raider of the Apes.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
That's the real title. But
you saw this
movie. That movie was. Amazing.
Yeah, and this is what I was saying before. This was my personal favorite.
Understandable.
It is great. I love the first movie. Like that is a great movie. And
Rise is great.
I kept my head. I kept my head in the sand as far as like you know whatever was going to happen in Dawn.
Yeah, I didn't watch any trailers until I saw one in front of X-Men.
Oh yeah, I only saw the initial first trailer, and then I basically just kept my head down, didn't like worry about who's the casting. I knew the primary cast and like a little bit of the plot, but like going in like not knowing what was happening, that movie was fantastic. It's a beautiful film, and it's surprising how much emotion they managed to get out of like a bunch of CGI apes. I feel like Andy Serkis should definitely be nominated for something.
Yeah, I think the funny thing that for a while it was the restriction on possible mocap nominations was actors saying it doesn't count as real acting because of the effects team, and now there's some protesting from effects teams who are like, wait a minute, you didn't do that. That was like half us. But yeah, I think Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is great. I guess, as I tweeted when it first came out, it's like an examination of how one wrong act made out of fear, reinforced by malice, will spiral into inescapable tragedy. It's just great. It's not my favorite blockbuster, but it is sort of the best kind, where it is simultaneously super exciting on a surface level and also has an unquestionable brain and heart powering it.
Yeah.
It also has one of the best action scenes of the summer, which is apes riding horses, dual wielding machine guns,
yes.
and hijacking tanks.
You know,
I was going to say that
I know it's CG, but I was also going to say I think the climax is my favorite action scene.
Oh, were they on the tower?
Yeah,
it was funny because it was two apes, and I'm like, it feels the most human action sequence we've got this summer.
It's got two of the most human characters we've got this summer. That's the ultimate point to remember. It's like, yeah, no matter how well choreographed you make it, if you don't also give a damn about the stakes, then it doesn't matter. And here you've got good choreography and good stakes, so it's all like, boom,
yes.
Winner.
And I feel like the thing that the film does better than the first one is that like the villain actually like feels like a villain who has like completely justified actions. And you can understand like where he's coming from and why he is not like willing to trust these humans.
I think it's the mentioned sense of humor.
Weird
sense of humor, but really fantastic movie. Really recommend when it comes out.
Yeah.
Okay,
also,
next up.
One more thing about Planet of the Apes. I think Keri Russell has, like, the ability to just, like, cry on cue. Like, someone just snaps their fingers and she cries.
Well, as all good actresses and actors should. Boyhood, I think, is a James Wan.
I did see Boyhood. Boyhood is brilliant in the smaller moments, even if I don't think, like it's grand. Like, I guess, it's the movie that was film by Richard Linklater over the course of 12 years. Like, once a year, he would just call up the whole cast and be like, hey, it's filming time. And then they would film a chunk of story. Basically, he had, like, a partial script written out along the way, but he was, like, changing it bits and pieces based on sort of what kind of person the actors were becoming along the way. And it's kind of incredible to watch because, I mean, you realize when you get to the end, holy shit, this guy was, like, an 8-year-old just 12 months ago. And it's one that I think it's, like its greatest weakness is also its greatest strength. Like, I think the fact that it is the most realistic in terms of tone and texture, like, it feels very much true to how real life feels all the time. Like, it's not a movie of grand climax, of, like, big climaxes and, like, major defining moments of life. It's all about those small bits. Just those quiet moments of you just, like, going to a baseball game with your dad or, like, sneaking out with your friends and they get guys who are too old and you to, like, throw saw blades at a piece of wood in a construction site house. Like it is a movie that sort of defines that life isn't big ones. It is just these little, small, true-to-life things. And I suppose the only, like, joking plot hole they had is that there's a sequence where they go to the midnight release of the 6th Harry Potter book and nobody drives by and yells, Snape kills Dumbledore.
Snape kills Dumbledore. Now, that was an actual spoiler. Okay, that was a weird spoiler, but an actual spoiler.
Yeah, Boyhood is okay. Is very much worth checking out.
Has anybody seen The Purge Anarchy? Oh,
I heard it was surprisingly good.
I heard it had actual purging.
I heard it's better than the...
Yes, there was also actual purging.
Like, puking?
We can also discuss, like, how weird it is that apparently the first thing that everyone does in this franchise is, like, go to murder.
Well, what would... I mean...
I would file
guess,
my taxes...
Okay, let's be real here. Like, on the list of things to do, if The Purge was real, how far down the list would murder be? Be honest.
I could understand why people would go to murder.
I'd go to polygamy.
But right away, though,
Actually go to bank robbery.
And then you'd get murdered by the guys in the mask.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay, that's a fair point.
I mean,
point.
For you and
maybe
I mean,
that's why
for you and me, we'd probably, like, be thrown into trafficking.
Yeah,
I just start
beating
traffic.
I was gonna say we don't need to purge,
like,
for that though.
I just do, like, illegal science experiments on cows.
Why cows?
I don't know, because they were the first animal that came to mind when I was panicking trying to think of an answer.
You could have said dogs. Everyone else does it.
And I like dogs.
I know.
But yeah. Scrolling down the list.
Speaking of, we kind of mentioned comedies that came and went. Sex Tape was another one.
Oh my god, I heard that was awful.
At least you heard something about it.
I was aware it existed.
My favorite thing about that movie is I tweeted this. I was getting a haircut, and my barber, she was talking about, like, how she was trying to find some photos. I'm just like, did you upload them to the cloud? And then immediately after I said that, a commercial for Sex Tape came on.
Nobody on this. Cloud. Nope.
It's like, that could not have been, like, more perfect reasons to not use the cloud.
Did anyone else see Lucy?
No.
I heard iffy things about it.
Yeah, I've heard, like, I guess the best way to characterize it is, I sort of feel about the same way I feel about Akira, and that it feels like it has a lot of interesting ideas it wants to go after, but it's also too interested in, like, candy corn, in, like, cotton candy corn style foamy action to really get at any of those things.
So, when is Marvel just gonna, like, bite the bullet and give Scarlett Johansson, like, her own movie?
No idea. I know she's pregnant now, so that's probably why they were that's probably why Kevin Feige in some recent interview is saying, yeah, we'd like to do a Black Widow movie, but she's pregnant right now, so, you know.
I feel like it would be in their best interest after Lucy and Winter Soldier to just go along and just, like, finally do it.
Considering we've been in this, like, Scarlett Johansson's lately, where she's just been in, like, hit after hit. I mean,
she's in another movie this year too, wasn't she?
Under the Skin.
Winter Soldier.
Yes.
Under the Skin is terrific, but definitely not a summery movie. But yeah, that's another one that basically is, you know, utilizing Scarlett Johansson to her fullest ability. But yeah, I mean, just the last two, like just through the last 2 years, I mean, Her, The Winter Soldier, Under the Skin, Don John, Lucy, Chef, like just a bunch of really, of like worthwhile movies with quality Scarlett Johansson performances.
Did any of you see Chef?
I saw Chef.
Was that good?
It was pretty good. It's the kind of movie that your mom is going to watch and say, hey, that was nice. And that is the best way to character. It is a nice, small-scale movie without too much, like, overdrawn conflict. It is just a nice little, sort of a Saturday afternoon kind of movie.
Okay. Not to stop you two, the birds, but we should move on. I guess we are on Marvel.
Wait, did anyone see Hercules? All I know about that movie is the Rocky Horror Horse, or is it the Rocky Picture Horse?
I think he does both.
He throws a horse.
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
I thought you were going to say the thing you know is, from what I understand, is that everything they've shown in the trailer is from the first five
minutes.
Yeah, that's
the first couple
of
minutes are going over the labors, and then the rest of it is actually like a teen movie. I heard decent things about it, on top of the fact that, The Rock throws a horse and then says fucking centaurs, which is sort of the best, like, argument for me to see a movie I wasn't otherwise probably going to check out, so
but it's
that might be one I check out.
It's also not worth it to pay $10 just to see, like, those scenes and then, like, bolt.
Yeah, that is what Redbox is for, especially since, Brett Ratner doesn't exactly have the best track record.
Yeah. Okay, so Guardians.
Yes,
Guardians of the
that
Galaxy.
Movie was really
that was
good.
Quite good.
I feel like I'm in the like it, not love it camp.
Which is
reasonable. I feel like everybody came out of it, and I'm like, it's a good film.
I'm like somewhere in the middle. Like, I think my major problem is that a lot of the, like, explanation of the characters is just through them, like, reading off an exposition thing. Like, it's like they picked up the back of the Marvel trading cards that comes with their action figure. Like, I am Ronan the Accuser, warrior of the Kree, who's pissed off because my religious crusade was stopped.
Yeah, it's like... Because,
I was
going to
say, that was my
it's
biggest
like, because
problem.
Fuck those people. That's basically,
that was my biggest
basically
problem,
his motivation. It's just like, fuck you guys. They don't
yeah,
like
that
you.
Was my problem. And it's kind of a problem for the auto Marvel film. The films are non-existent.
Yeah.
They have no
like,
arc.
Just,
they have no
kind
plot.
Of there to, like, get things going.
Yeah. They're, like for better or worse, Marvel has made their series more centered on developing the heroes, which I like most of the time, but I think we like this and Thor 2. They do suffer a bit from having more bland heroes. Villains, yes. No, the heroes are awesome.
I think
like, regardless of who our favorite of the Guardians was, I think we could all agree that Drax was, like, the standout surprise.
Dude, Dave Bautista is a surprisingly good actor.
So good.
Like,
well, I think because he was given such a little role that it's really hard to screw that
maybe,
up.
But even I think that kind of perfect deadpan, like, not aware of the jokes happening
yeah, like,
attitude is hard
like,
to pull
the
off.
The whole, like, straight man thing that, like James said, that can be hard to pull off, because sometimes you can, like, play it too straight or just... like, makes him come up as a prick.
Yeah.
But he made us,
yeah.
like,
metaphor.
Yeah, I don't know if I told you two this, but I remember I told somebody when I came out of the movie, because I saw it early, I'm like, everybody's going to talk about Rocket and Groot, but to me, I think Drax is
yeah,
the biggest
Drax,
star
Drax
of the film.
Drax is the best. Because, I mean, on the one hand, yeah, he is badass, but then they also play his sort of hyper-masculinity as a joke. And I think it works really well.
I am not a thesaurus.
Nothing goes over my head.
My
reflexes
are too fast.
I would catch
it.
My other beef with the film is more of a, I kind of, we've been there, done that before.
Yeah.
Marvel films now.
It's another one in sort of the vein of Thor 2 and Avengers, where the plot is about trying to find the MacGuffin, and then the main battle is a big battle.
In space, with things blowing up and...
The plot
of
basically was like friendship is magic.
Well, friendship is
magic. Yeah, pretty much the ending. But yeah, fantastic use of music.
I love that scene where like they're waiting for Peter and the ship has like escaped the prison and
mm-hmm.
Thor's like, what's taking so long? And then Drax is just like, behold, and Chris Pratt just like flies
you
out to the
love
of this
night.
That was so amazing.
Of the capes.
I think that's what made the movie like really great to be, is like that specific scene. Just like, all right, yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Really fun. Really fun.
What's the opposite of the next movie though?
Yeah.
Get on up. You're not a fan of
James
Brown?
I never
saw
that. I was talking about the Biker Mice from Mars
Ninja
movie.
Turtles?
The what?
I thought Ninja Turtles was really fun too.
I was saying the opposite of that. I thought it was a joyless slog.
I didn't see that.
I just heard
the song, and that kind of says anything I need to say about the movie.
That is actually the best part of the movie. Okay, correction. The best part of the movie is this like 30-second bit where they're riding in the elevator and they slowly start building up this rhythmic beat.
Well, yeah.
Like that is a legitimate moment where the tones are working. But yeah, the rest of the time it mostly feels like they took a generic adventure blockbuster movie formula, plugged in the turtles. Fichtner is bland, Shredder is boring. The plot is
I feel like Shredder. I could be wrong, but
they literally forgot the way April O'Neil's dad died. Like early in the movie, they showed him being burned to death when he was destroying his research, and then later on, Fichtner. So, like, when I shot your dad, and I was like, bullshit, you just said, like, 40 minutes ago that he burned alive.
You showed it happening. I mean, you can also...
Can you not be bothered to check your own work?
No.
I mean, you can shoot someone
to be fair, that was... To be fair, that was, if I'm not mistaken, that was Sprinter using... Sprinter was in the fire, and he thought her dad burned in it. And I guess he was saying that he killed her dad and then set
the point
fire.
Is, it reeks of really lazy writing. Like, it very much feels like it was a heavily rewritten, heavily re-edited and reshot movie. Like, you can tell that...
I think that was originally supposed to be Shredder.
Yeah, everyone knows, everyone knows that.
That's why Shredder's...
But doesn't do anything. Like, she's just there to say, I'll be here in the sequel, kids.
I'm pretty sure she's dead. But I was going to say, I think the biggest thing for me about Sax and the Shredder is the getaway, because Sax is on his helicopter and Shredder, he's like 10 minutes later, and somehow they're both together. And that's never explained.
Google Hangouts.
But yeah, I mean, maybe I went over the expectation, but I didn't think it was an awful film. I thought it was kind of enjoyable. I thought the Snow Mountain Chase was a great action sequence.
I think it's theoretically good, but I'm just so tired of that. The kind of super CG-heavy, like, weightless camera just swooping around everywhere. Like, that sort of style of action making just feels completely... It feels like it has no stakes, and I'm just watching a crappy video game cutscene.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it's really hard. I mean, they could have... I mean, Ninja Turtles are really weird to do because I don't know if the giant rubber costumes would fly with a lot of people in this day and age. But I kind of get your point, especially being that I don't think they should have made them Hulk and Mask.
Yeah, it's...
Because they're not...
It's especially creepy that, like, Michelangelo's main trait is that he's...
I told you.
I thought it was fair, more funny, but I can see how it's creepy.
Yeah, I think it's especially made creepy by, like, Michelangelo's main personality trait being that he's super horny all the time and is always hitting on Megan Fox. Like, that combined with the hulking design just comes off as super unnerving. I suppose one thing to say is that Megan Fox is actually decent.
Does she still have the acting range of, like, an amateur porn star?
Nah, she actually feels like she's acting like an actual human being. Quite nice.
No. So not like a porn
Which
star.
Which I guess has to make sense because she, for some reason, they made her the center of the universe.
Yeah,
apologies to Megan Fox.
It's sort of that same Amazing Spider-Man problem where the universe feels so unnecessarily constrained and small and everything is connected in this sort of like weirdly neat and tidy way that just doesn't really click.
Yeah. Huh. No, to be fair, apparently that's from the new comic book series that they relaunched a couple of years ago. Where he's connected to everything. Isn't that what?
Famous. Like the famous painters and such.
Yeah. They were professors.
Yeah.
And Shredder learns ninjutsu, teaches them ninjutsu from a book he found in the sewers. Splinter. Is there...
Two different people.
Are there any other things left in August? Like, I feel like, I guess, Expendables 3, did anyone see?
Yeah, well, I mean, everybody should have seen that. It came out like 5 weeks. It came out 3 weeks before it came out. So it's been free to watch on the internet.
Anybody see Planes, Fire, and Rescue?
What the fuck is...
Anyhow, Expendables 3 is Expendables. Like, honestly, at this point, I don't know why I continue to invest in this franchise.
Considering God, the first two... Because you saw the first two as well.
Yeah.
And they were very tedious.
The first one is more enjoyable than the second one.
And
which,
the third one
which
is
I found the second one
any better or about on the same level?
Yeah.
Okay, but yeah, I think that's that for the summer. I mean, I don't think any of you've seen Sin City or
The
Giver.
I'm just trying to see if there are any other smaller movies that I watched, because we already mentioned Chef was pretty good.
I heard The Giver was incredibly bad.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's incredibly bad, but I heard a lot of people were disappointed with the changes they made to
it. Well, I mean, yeah. Look at it.
Yeah, I guess the only other one I saw this summer that we didn't mention was Life Itself, the Roger Ebert documentary that they were working on before his death, and then after his death they just sort of continued on it. And I think that it is very much a like very traditional style Talking Heads documentary, but it is pretty good. It's not like the... Like, I mean, I think it also suffered that I watched it, like, minutes after finishing Jodorowsky's Dune, which is an incredible documentary and maybe my favorite movie of the year, period. So, again, it's one where I think I might have been in the wrong context to love it, but yeah, it definitely was pretty good. And I think because it's one of the CNN movies, it's actually going to be airing it on CNN later this year.
Oh, is that the one they got in trouble for because they shouldn't be making documentaries about stuff? Oh, no, that was the Hillary Clinton one. Never mind. I guess kind of to wrap up since we're getting up there in time. Takeaways from this summer overall. I mean, greatest summer ever, recent summer, possible.
Pretty rounded out, solid one. Like, again, there were three movies that I really actively disliked, but those are the only ones. Like, everything else ranged from decent to a couple, like a number of really big standouts. And it was also a pretty good variety, the kind of thing that were great. Like, it was the great ones weren't all the same thing. So I think it was definitely a very solid summer output altogether.
Okay, Justin.
Well, the movies that we talked about today, I've only seen like six of them. I liked all of them. Or enjoyed them to some degree. I will have to, I'll probably have to, like, rewatch Spider-Man, but otherwise.
You have my pity, you do.
Yeah, I think it was stronger than last year. Last year, I remember enjoying a lot of films, but nothing really stood out as special.
And there were,
and I think
just as many duds last year, because last year had, like, Star Trek, which didn't work, Man of Steel, which didn't work for a lot of people, Elysium, which was sort of a big disaster as well, and the Lone Ranger, I know I'm in the minority like it, so, like, the majority of people did not like that. It was definitely a summer where it had lot of big failures.
That movie was just way too long for its own good. It should have cut out like half an hour to an hour. I thought it was going to end like three times.
But yeah, I think last year was like far more defined by a lot of big disappointments, whereas this one had some, but I think overall it was a lot better balanced of quality.
Yeah, I think I don't want to say past. I think it was a decent summer and that nothing that I saw was really terrible, or I should say... was not to my expectations. Let's go with that. Transformers is what I expect from Transformers at this point. It's not a great film at all, but it was what I expected from Michael Bay, and you threw that at the floor.
Well, okay, we didn't quite expect that much tedium, though, but, you know.
I guess
after three's hour-long climax got put me to sleep, I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
I like three.
He keeps on making money, so what can you do? But yes, that's, a lot of, a really great comedy, 22 Jump Street, some great action films. I don't know. I mean, dramas aren't usually
some great, like, smaller scale movies as well.
Yeah. So overall, it was an enjoyable summer. I think the box office kind of reflected that. It was a summer, I think it was an even summer, in that there was a lot of movies that people wanted to see spread out throughout the summer.
Oh my god, we forgot.
But maybe not that one mega movie that anybody was...
Okay.
So, yeah, we'll be back next week. Oh. I have no idea what.
Did we all pick our favorite of the summer?
I thought we all kind of said it while we were doing it.
I don't know if I remember what Justin was. Justin, yours was Apes, right?
Yeah, mine is Apes. Yours is Boyhood and Earl's.
Okay, my favorite all overall the summer was Snowpiercer, but like favorite summery movie would be Jump Street.
Yeah, so yours was Snowpiercer, and then Earl's was Jump Street.
No, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Yes. So yeah, we'll be back next week. I don't know what we're doing. I do know sometime in September we're probably going to do a TV show. Well, we're going to do a TV show episode. I don't know if you folks are going to do a TV show episode.
I don't know how many shows I know that I'm watching this season.
There are so many shows coming back that I'm going to be watching. I'm excited.
Well, it's going to be that. It's going to be talking about the shows
that are
coming out.
So many people pressuring me to watch Arrow.
You should definitely watch Arrow.
You should watch
Arrow. You should also watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Arrow Season 2 is hitting Netflix on September 14th, which means that you can probably watch 2 episodes a night from now on to get to Season 2 by the time it hits Netflix.
Do it, James. We'll be back next week.
This has been Nerds on the Rocks episode 184.
Do it.
That's my fam, I'll hold them down forever. Us against the world, we can battle whoever. Together ain't no way we gon' fail. You know I got your back, just like a turtle shell. Nobody do it better. All my brothers tryna get some cheddar. We all wanna cut like the shredder. Me and my bros come together for the dough. Bought the orange Lamborghini, call it Michelangelo. With the nunchuck dough, and I'm pulling up slow. When we fall up in the party, they know anything goes. Shake my Rolex, they say I'm the man of the hour. All this green in my pockets, you can call it turtle power. Come in between me and my brothers. We all around if it's going down. It's just us, all for one. Yeah, you hearing right, our business done. We disappear into the night. Came up together so we all down for the fight. Ain't nothing wrong with that. Family ain't nothing strong as that. And I'll be posted where the strong as that. Brothers by my side, city on my back. Real heroes, that's what the people want. They ain't born, gotta create them. Saying we gone soon as we save them. That's part of the plan. By my side, I'ma keep my brothers. Live or die, man, we need each other. All
for one, we fight together. Knock, knock, you about to get shell shocked. All for one, we ride together. Knock, knock, you about to get shell shocked. All for one, we fight together. Knock, knock, you about to get shell shocked. Believe me, she taking pics for me, told her smile for me, pass her off, I'm around.